If you ever see the film of the first match against Uruguay, it finished 0-0. And, well, we've learned since that Uruguayans are not to be treated lightly at football. There's not many of them, but those they've got are all right. And they know how to shut the game up. That's what they did. And at the end, you know, there was some booing. And I'd never heard booing at Wembley before. And I thought to myself, I don't know what it was, whether it was the expectancy or I'm not quite sure. But the next game, when we played, we were slightly better. And it was one of the teams, England was the team that improved as it went along. Yes. And I thought the big turning point was the goal that Bobby Charlton whacked in against Mexico. And the crowd suddenly came to life. That was one of the things about Bobby Charlton. When he got the ball, the game came to life. And he whacked this one in from the edge of the box. And I sensed then that, you know, hello, something might happen here.
In a way, was the fact that England didn't win that game, to what extent did that galvanise the players?
Yeah, well, the thing was, I think that was the personality of the players. There was no difficult people amongst them. You know, no problem players or people nipping off or trying to do anything. And the other thing was, too, Ramsay had thought a few things out. For example, he took us down to the film studios.
Pinewood.
And they were making the James Bond film. So we saw Sean Connery and he came and talked to us. And Lulu was there, I remember. And we saw all this all in the day. And it sort of took us away from the World Cup. And then we had another game where those of us who hadn't played in the game played against an Arsenal team. Nobody ever got word of that, but we knew that. And we won. And I remember the lads lifting me up as though we'd won the cup, you know. There was a few things went on, and I thought it sort of gelled us together, really. I think one of the big things is, too, despite what people say, you're playing at home, so you could switch the telly on, or you could ring your wife or your family or wherever it might be. There's that. That does make a difference. Yet, in saying that, when Spain were hosts in 1982, I was there with the BBC, it was too much fun. They froze. And they got knocked out in the first round. Northern Ireland beat them. There's two ways of looking at it. But I think for us, it sort of, as it went along, the momentum picked up, the crowd picked up, and got to a stage when we got to the semi-final, I thought, yes, we were going to win this.
I mean, the quarterfinal, the big talking point was Jimmy Greaves was left out against Argentina. Jeff Hurst got his chance, didn't he? And he took it.
We were sat in the lounge at the Endenall Hotel. There's no witnesses to this because the other three who were sat there were Harold Ramsay, Harold Shepherdson and Bobby Moore. And there was four of us and we were in a conversation. Alf used to do this, occasionally get us together. And I was like sort of one of the senior players. And he said, we should score more goals. And I said, well, English teams have never done quite as well without a recognised central striker, you know, centre forward virtually. Now, I don't know that he took that on board or not, but he put Jeff in and Jeff Hurst in. And from that point, he was never going to come out. You know, it was just the way it was at the time. But I think the team started to gel together when they played Argentina. They were all right. That was the team I feared. Argentina was the team I actually feared.
Well, they had a man sent off. Ratting was sent off as well.
He's a good player too. I played against him in the World Cup in Chile in 62. He knew the game inside out. And when he went off, that was a blow to them. He was a linchpin in their defence. And they're like the Uruguayans. If they want to defend, they'll wait there all night for you. When he went off, you know, I thought, it's going our way now.
Then on to the semi-final, you play Portugal. Mm-hmm. The great Eusebio, I think he was the leading scorer in the tournament at that point as well. And a lot was made of Nobby Styles' individual performance that day to nullify him.
That's right. Alf just said to Nobby, that's your job. You know, we don't want him in the headlines tomorrow. You know, it was as simple as that. That was a ploy, man-for-man marking. Teams have been doing that for years. People talked about it as though it was something new. Teams were doing that when I started playing. And Stan Matthews used to say, when he started playing in the 1930s, you know, so Tom Finney will have experienced it as well. people used to try and just get them out of the game, key players. And the thing was exactly the same thing with them. Portugal, I just couldn't see them somehow. Eusebio, keep them quiet, we'll beat them. And it's incredible, though, you know, one man can make a big difference if he's good enough. One man can make the other players into better. And Eusebio was their key player. Nobby kept him quiet, and frankly, I never thought we could lose. And I didn't. I was not frightened of Portugal at all.
You get to the final, and things are going really well. England are 2-1 up with seconds to go, and then West Germany equalised. What's going through your mind at that point, looking on from the sidelines?
Incredibly, we were sat just by the Royal Box there, and as it kept, we agreed 5 minutes from time, we'd come down there and come and sit with Alf, which we did. So as we came down the steps, Germany equalised. So some of the lads behind me couldn't have seen it.
You saw it though, did you?
I just saw the ball go into the goal, no more than that. And so I got sat down, and I was going to say to Alf, shall I sit here? And I thought, no, I'll not say anything. And if you've seen pictures, I'm sat immediately behind him. There was no panic though with Alf. He just took it in his stride. Once we got past Argentina, I always felt we'd win.
And then the third goal, the controversial goal scored by Jeff Hurst, made by a fantastic run down the right wing by Alan Ball of Blackpool. A great piece of control, a good shot. The big question is, was it over the line? I've seen it from lots of different angles, in black and white, in colour. I can't decide. What about you at the time?
I had no idea, because from where I was sat on the halfway line, all I was doing, I kept looking at the linesman, and everybody was jumping up and down and looking at that, and I said, just keep your eyes on the linesman. Sure enough, you know, the referee, unlike now, where television exposed it, get over to the linesman and find out, because I thought there'd be some trouble. And of course, eventually that's what he did. I don't know, I never saw it. I've seen two or three different angles of it, of course. But at the time, the nearest player to it was Roger Hunt. And if I was looking for an honest man in that team, it'd be Roger Hunt. And he said, he definitely crossed the line, he said. So that's the word I always took.
And then the fourth goal just killed it off. Alan Ball always felt that it should have been squared by Jeff Hurst to the far post for a tap-in, but Hurst decided to have a shot himself, didn't he?
Well, the funny thing was that the fact that Ball was over on the other side, they had a defender over there. And if you ever watch the film again, as the ball's knocked over by Bobby Moore knocked it down, knocked it over the top. Jeff ran after it. They were trying to get a goal, of course. They were caught a bit square. But the left fullback, Jeff was running through, and instead of coming across and covering Jeff Hurst, right, that would have allowed the ball to go to Alan Ball. He didn't. He sort of backed off, and Jeff Hurst went on and shot. So the whole thing really was an error by that defender. If he'd have come across, one of the things to say about Jeff, he was never a dribbler. He might have found it a bit more difficult to get. That guy comes across and pushes him out, pushes him towards his left side. You know, if he gives it to Alan Ball then, well, that pass has got to get there. And it's nearly time up as it is. They're all tired. The pass can go wrong. The control can go wrong. So in the end, but Jeff did what he had to do. He did it perfectly. He couldn't have done it better. He slammed it in. Yeah.
So the full-time whistle goes, and what was it like? Just give us a sense of the elation.
We just wanted to win as much as anything else for the other lads, if nothing else. And frankly, for the nation, it was important at the time. It knitted the nation. Everybody was there. I mean, so when we left the ground afterwards to get to the hotel in the centre of London, the streets were lined, 4 and 5 deep all the way, and we couldn't get into the hotel in Kensington. Just couldn't get the bus through, and then they had us out on the balcony, and, you know, they wouldn't go home. People were diving into the fountains in Trafalgar Square and all kinds. It was, yeah, but you remember, it was a different time. It was the start of something in a way. We got home, and that night we got back in the hotel. I think I remember rightly, Bobby Moore came to me and he said, we've been invited to the Playboy Club. So I said, well, he said, a few of us, my missus and me, and he said, do you want to come? I said, all right. And I think Big Jack, I can't remember, I think it might have been Big Jack Charlton. There was somebody else came with us, and I can never remember who it was. And we went in there for a sort of half an hour, no much more. And we said, they're falling over us. And then we just sort of walked back to the hotel. No, nothing different after that. The next day, we went and did a television appearance. I think it was for ITV. And from that point, we jumped in the bus. We all went home. We'd never, ever discussed money. And Alf got us together in a room no bigger than this room we're in now. This is at the ITV on the Sunday after the Saturday World Cup final. It's the first time money had been mentioned. And he said, the FA have given us £22,000 as a bonus. Now, how do you suggest we do it? Now, normally you would say, well, there are things like, you know, how many matches you've played, or Bobby and I, we'd agreed before, and no matter what happens, we'll just share whatever we have. And so we just said no. Bob said no to Alf. We all agreed, whatever we had, we'd just share. So it's 22,000, 22 players, and that's what we got. After tax, it was something like 700 quid.
And it was a long time before you got your winner's medal, and you've mentioned that before, 2009. Of course, this happens all the time now. All the squad get winner's medals at the World Cup finals, as they do at the FA Cup final and all the other big competitions. How did that feel? Was that a strange experience, receiving it so many years after 66?
Yes, it was, really. It was as if it was like patching up an old wound, almost. It was quite odd, really. It was as if, you know, they didn't quite know what to do with us. We didn't expect to get a medal. That was a thing. We didn't expect. That was our generation. When it came, I must be honest, I was pleased about it. I've still got it. And, I mean, some of them have actually sold them over the years. I've had people ask me if I want to sell it and all this sort of stuff. But I thought, no, I'll hold on to it. But the point is, it was a strange experience. We went to Downing Street to get it. Gordon Brown, was he Prime Minister at the time? He would be. Yeah, so it was nice to go to Downing Street, actually. I enjoyed that as much as getting the medal, to be honest.
We talk about money. If it had happened in 2016, you would have made a small fortune. Do you ever think about that? I know you're not a materialistic person, Jim, but have you ever considered how much you would have made in the modern era if you'd won the World Cup?
No, I haven't really. That's quite true. I'm not just saying that. No, I haven't thought about it that way. We quite often say, somebody said to me the other day, I bet, do you wish you were playing now? And I said, well, the pitches are better, the kit's better, the coaching's better, everything about it is better, the money's certainly better, the treatment of injuries is better. And he asked me, do you wish you were playing now? And the simple truth is, of course, but every player will tell you they wish they were playing now. Because being a footballer, your life cuts off. Mine, I was lucky. I got till I was nearly 36. You know, but so many of them go earlier. But that's the world you go into. That's the world you go into with your eyes open.
Will it ever happen again? Can England one day win the greatest prize in football again?
Oh, you never say never. If you'd have said to me 50 years ago that England will never even be in a final, never mind win the World Cup, in 50 years, it won't happen. I wouldn't have believed you. I'd have taken any odds. And it's been a bit of a downer for us, really. And let's be frank, in the last couple of World Cups, not so hot. You know, you've got to get over that thing. It's one of those things. But why not? Why not? There's no reason why any team cannot win it, but they've got to have what we had in 1966. You've got to have the depth of squad. And the man really, really got in the hearts to win it. And that's what we had.